Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
And welcome to you who are visitors. Are you from my UCCS class, Jeff Skull's class? Well, welcome. So you've already been there to the class? Yeah, so you've already gotten to meet Andrew. Great. So over the last, month and then some, we've been looking together at what is practice in our tradition. What do we mean when we say to practice Zen? And what are the practices that we emphasize in this tradition? For the next period of time, in a way, we'll just be continuing that, because practicing this is what we do together. But in particular, we're going to bring some focus to our liturgy, our sutra service, and the writings that nourish us in this particular corner of Zen. Our refuge process and our ethical precepts, our vows, and koans, the particular gift of our line of Zen. And these are all, each in its own way, particularly characteristic of our open source tradition. And other forms of practice with their own richness are found elsewhere, but people often ask me to try to make a little clearer who are we, what do we do? And this is one way of doing that. So on each first Monday when we're singing our sutra service, reciting our liturgy, I'll be highlighting each time one particular part of the liturgy just for a few minutes before we begin. And on each second Monday, when we we'll recite and discuss the precepts together, likewise, we'll be going in a sequential way, and I'll talk a little bit about each as we begin. And we'll be having a Sunday afternoon koan group and a Saturday afternoon refuge group going on, so we really will be sort of delving into these. So by way of what are we up to here? What am I up to here? But I found, as I sat with what I might want to bring forward tonight, I found myself wanting to explore with you the place where our purification chant and refuge meet. What is purification and what's refuge? So I'm going to, our liturgy starts off with this, and I'm going to give you first an older chanted version that we don't often do, and then we can sing just one time what we do, usually do on a sutra night. So the older version says, all of the ancient karma ever created by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, hatred, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, I now confess openly and fully. The way we do it now in our own tradition is a gift of Richie Domingue, who gave us this, started from an African walking beat. So it's an African walking blues that he set the purification to, which suits a purification, right? Suits a confession in a way, the blues. It's the blues. And so that one goes, all the ancient twisted karma, timeless greed, hatred, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, I confess openly and fully.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So that's how we begin our liturgy, and we call it purification. And so I have this lovely quote from Simone Weil that, to me, spoke to this. So bear with me. She says, the danger is not that the soul should doubt whether there is any bread, but that by a lie it should persuade itself that it is not hungry. Should I read that again? The danger is not that the soul should doubt whether there's any bread, but that, by a lie, it should persuade itself that it is not hungry. And there's a koan that I didn't have time to look up. I know it's in the Sakyas and Gates. That is from a modern author who said it's a good thing to know what a glass is for. But it's also very good to know what thirst is for. You can see the connection. Something like that, right, Andrew?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So there's something essential about this beginning. And to me, what it does is to welcome into the room all of us. To welcome into the room the dark corners, the hungry and thirsty me. The one that grieves for what I've done and not done. And like the Episcopal prayer that says, we have done those things that we ought not to have done, and we have left undone those things that we ought to have done. Just to speak it out loud, all of the ancient karma from the beginning. So there's a way, I think, by doing this, by speaking it out loud, it just says, I confess openly and fully. Here it is. Right in the room, yeah? That we take care of our fear and shame. We take care of ourselves. We open our hearts to ourselves in this way and allow ourselves to feel inside of everything that desire, deep desire to help. Underneath all of that that we're confessing, we feel the tender heart of ourselves that is connected to everything. So refuge begins with purification. So we come upon this phrase, purifying the mind, sometimes. And my understanding of this purifying the mind is not that I'm going to make my mind as if I could make my mind anything, as if there is a mind I could actually find if I look for it, but to make it, whatever it is, clean and bright and shiny. Yeah? Well, if I did that, wouldn't I be excluding most everything? So that doesn't seem too useful as a ground for refuge, to try to exclude everything. Because that's pretty much saying refuge is going to be where I'm not. Well, how useful is that refuge? If it's where you're not. You know? You can't get there from here. So let's not take purification that way. Although it can very much to me mean, right now I can abandon whatever I don't need, Right now, this moment is completely free and open. In that sense, there is a purification that is that I don't have to include anything that's not here. I don't have to include anything that's not real. Yeah? But everything that's here, everything that that is me and that is us and that it is this, I don't have to exclude any of it. So I was thinking about the expression coming clean. Isn't that an interesting expression for a confession? It's an acknowledgement that confession is a purification. It's coming clean. And so that's how I feel about that. And so, and in our platform sutra, in which the platform is really the whole mandala of practice on which we stand and step forward and take our vows for life, our vows to be fully one with our life and useful in it, to us and to others. The platform sutra begins with this acknowledgement of what I have done that I wish I had not done, the harm that I have done to others, to myself, the exclusions that I have made. And the platform sutra says, standing right here now, you're done. This is new. This is now. And so there's that sense of standing right in the gate, standing right in the threshold. So then what? So purification. But what I really want to emphasize in that purification is the welcoming of the taking care of you. Taking care of you. And because you are just what is happening here right now, and by not excluding anything, by letting everything be present, taking care of everything. That's a pretty large gesture that is, you don't have to be thinking about it, but see how it feels next time you say that purification. See if you feel a kind of warmth, a kind of opening that can be present. So then what? What about this refuge bit? So I want to talk just a little bit about a meeting I went to last night that was down at Wild Goose. And it was a meeting called by members of the NAACP to discuss a book, Just Mercy. And I had really wanted to go to it and almost didn't. I had to be late because our class didn't finish until 5:15. And I hadn't gotten the book read. But I just wanted to be there. So I grabbed my little clearly unread book and headed down and entered a room. They had a dozen or so people in it talking about this book, which is a very, even without reading it, I know that it's a tough read because it is about material that I have read quite a bit about, which is how broken our criminal justice system is and the cruelty of the cruelty and the inequity, the racism that's built into our criminal justice system, especially focusing on capital punishment, which I have opposed forever, my whole life. And so I thought, well, I'm going to listen. You know, I just want to learn. I will listen. So that's what I did. But I noticed myself feeling really uncomfortable and not especially welcome. And so as I sat there, I needed to sort of do purification and refuge for myself in that context. I had to allow the awareness of the actions of my ancestors I had to allow the awareness of the ways that I have chosen comfort. I've chosen to be comfortable. And how I know that's an expression of white privilege. That I could choose to be comfortable. I could choose what not to think about. Not to think about who made my television set. Who was probably, you know, I met some of those people in Juarez one time. You know, it was a, you know, young, single Mexican mother earning 50 cents a day. You know, that's who made my television set. You know, that discomfort of, wait a minute, you know, to let that be with me and to look around the room and see this room full of beautiful people grappling with the hard stuff and just being, knowing that this is what's happening right here, right now. This, my discomfort, my happiness to be here, my happiness that this work is being done, that this book was written, and that we go forward. All of that. Yeah. So I had this sense of taking refuge in being poor, you know, in not having read the book, being late, being uncomfortable, you know, and being willing. There was a kind of a, I don't know why that was refuge, but it was just, this is what is right now. Yeah? And it's okay. It's enough. It's good. But it brought up a memory for me of a retreat. Some of you have heard me speak of multiple times because it was so powerful for me. A meditation retreat in which I was taking up the koan where you're hanging from a branch of a tree by your teeth. And you can't reach the branch with your arm, like you can't reach anything with your legs. You're just hanging there by your teeth, hanging on. And somebody comes under the tree and asks you why, the wording is, why did Bodhidharma come from the West? But the idea is, what's this all about? What's important here? What is this teaching offering? What is this? Help me. Fundamentally, it's somebody coming under your tree saying, say something that matters. Help me. And what came up for me just overwhelmingly in the retreat at that moment was how helpless I felt to relieve the suffering of anybody, of my teenage daughter, of my friends, of a wider circle. And that helplessness was just overwhelming. And I fell into a place of kind of terror. And through the night, I was just kind of shaken and hanging on. And I found myself, this most embarrassing thing to say, but it was very real, in the night saying, Mama loves me, Daddy loves me. Mama loves me, Daddy loves me. Hanging in there in the night. And I was comforted by that. That was a refuge. But it didn't solve the problem. And what did completely transform that whole experience was riding on this Greyhound bus New Year's Eve through the freezing, freezing night going back to Colorado Springs from Amarillo. Watching a young Mexican man take in these two sick children whose mother was sacked out on a bench and being mama for them, basically, through the night, playing music, pulling out his cards, doing card tricks, giving them cough medicine. I mean, just sort of doing, you know, not asking Mama. He just pulled out his cough medicine and gave him some. She was out of it. Anyway, so there, that was refuge. And can you see the connection? Mommy loves me, Daddy loves me. And then here on the bus is this totally loving guy who just knows what to do to help out these two sick kids on the bus. You know, he was just there for them. And so there, and so can you see how that's kind of like this moment where we feel, some of us, like we're hanging onto a branch by our teeth and somebody is under there saying, help, do something, right? Do something about this. And there is this essential move that I hadn't realized was connected until today when I was thinking about this, that refuge partly is Mommy loves me, Daddy loves me, whether we had a good mommy and daddy or not. But there is something about going back to the original place where we had what we needed. The original place where I am okay, because I don't have to, because there, I'm not, don't have to be anything at this moment. And what, so refuge then, what heals that? What's, so, when we say we take refuge, and we acknowledge that if refuge is someplace else, it can't help us. Right? So the refuge that we're longing for has to be here. So where is refuge if it's here? And how have we, with our purification, cleared the way to see it? Yeah? When we allow that everything is in the room, that there's nothing that we have to exclude, then there is nothing we have to defend against. Right? Because once you have said out loud all the stuff you have done, is there anything left to defend against? Somebody else can't really hurt you, only you, really, you know. And if you don't have to be scared of yourself, if yourself is actually just fine at this moment, and yourself is made of everything, ongoing, if there is not any thing here that's not this, then where are we? And so in a way, it's like if we, so we have this Prajnaparamita, an image of Prajnaparamita and a Prajnaparamita Sutra that some of us have studied a lot. So for those of you who haven't met this, the very, very short story of Prajnaparamita is that when we practice simply noticing, following a kind of thread that I think I've been trying to describe as purification, a thread back to the moment where nothing has happened yet. The brand fresh new. Like, if you're a Christian, you know that expression, in Christ saying, in me all things are made new. To me, there's a connection here. It's that what is it like when everything is new and fresh, when it's just this moment, which, because nothing else has happened yet, right? Beyond this. Then, that has, if we open our hearts to it, the quality of wombness. That out of this womb of right now, where Nothing is missing. I'm alive. This itself, just being here, is enough. Out of this freshness, I can come forth and be Buddha, be awake. And that is, in fact, what I'm made of. That is what I do moment after moment. I come forth into a new, I come forth with everything else out of we don't know where. But there's nothing lacking there. You're held. So it's kind of a radical thing to say because there's not always the sense of being held. And in fact, there's a sense of not being held a lot of the time. But when we walk back down the trail of our thoughts to this moment where it's just this, you might discover that feeling of being held, but not held in a confinement. Just held in the very openness, that the openness of this newness of now has a way of holding us. That we are safe in it, that it is a refuge. Just this. You matter. Boy, it's hard to talk about this stuff, I gotta tell you. It's, you talk about it and then you realize you haven't said it. So all I can do is sort of toss something to you, and then if any of it lands for you, then hurrah. Hallelujah. So I want to take one more step with this. And that is to talk a little bit about what koans are. So to me, that, did you talk about koans at all? Okay. So koans in our school of Zen are, questions or little pieces of a conversation, little exchanges, little intimate touches of people to each other, which have the power to let us notice this utter freshness of this, of now, to by just kind of clearing the thicket a little bit. So it's not by excluding anything, but there's a way that a koan pops open the portal to now. And so there are certain ones of them in particular that are kind of famous for this power. And I want to just say three of them because four. because they have to do with what we're talking about. So one of them is Zhao Zhou's dog, where somebody asks the old teacher, does a dog have Buddha nature? You know? The teaching says that everything has this fundamental nature of awakening, the nature of the ongoingness of everything, us, everything, is this awakening, this being rawly present. Does a dog have Buddha nature then? And Zhao Zhou says, no. So if we take that no, not as a matter of a philosophical discourse, but as a gesture of offering the thread that goes back to right now before any thoughts about it. That is powerful. We can actually travel that thread, all the way back to now, to just this with no naked, you know, with no dressing. And so here's another one that says, what is the sound of one hand? So, again, can you feel the kind of subtractive power of that? The sound of one hand. Oh, wait a minute. What? It's that kind of, wait, what? Yeah? That, again, is the little thread that can come back to, well, what about this one hand now, before I have to think about it? What about one hand? Before I have to know my name, before I am anything, before I do anything, before I've done anything right or wrong, what about it? And another one is quickly, quickly, before thinking right or wrong, good or bad, what is your face before your mother and father were even born? Before anything, what's your face? Can you feel again how that might be a thread that takes you back before you've got anything figured out? That's kind of what they do. And they do seem baffling, and that's okay, because they're not trying to explain something. They're offering an experience of the unelaborated now. So actually, maybe that's enough of that. So maybe more than enough of those. So in the middle of where we are right now, you know, where the experience comes up so frequently, I can't hold all of this. You know, this is more difficulty, this is more suffering, this is more unanswerable questions than I can hold in my world, in my country, in my state, in my city, in my family, in myself. You know, it sort of feels like at all levels, this is just more than I can hold sometimes. How and what am I supposed to do with this? We take refuge. And we know we want it, don't we? We know our poverty in a sense, or the illusion of poverty that shows up as hunger. And that's not wrong either. It just is, yeah? It's woven in. And underneath it is love. Underneath it is complete connection to all that is, known and unknown, here and not here. And yet, we go for refuge. So we go for refuge. It's held. And so this is the very odd thing about that we find about refuge when we let go of all of our ideas about it, when we let go of thoughts and opinions about ourselves, is that you don't have to know anything about it. There's power in just saying, I take refuge. You don't have to know what you're doing. And the words that I so often bring in came up again for me here as I close. And they are, your expression, yours, your expression of the actual body of what is the harbor and the weir. That's the refuge, right? Your own experience of it, your own being it, is exactly the womb out of which our next action steps. Yeah? The next thing that wants to happen, which is this most gorgeous and painful and mystifying life, it's coming right out of you. Your expression of this whole actual body is the harbor and the weir. This is the most important thing in the world. Its power comes from the ocean of essential nature, the ocean that is you, of which you're an expression. It's beyond explanation. We just accept it with respect and gratitude.